Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Time for Mike Florio, who is Pro Football Talk at ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports at Pro Football Talk on Twitter, on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Mike, always good to talk to you. Is Hugh Jackson kind of an idiot, or are the editors and producers of Hard Knocks just not doing him any favors? Mike, we got you.
Mike? The editors of Hard Knocks have gotten him.
Yeah, apparently the line has dropped. We will reestablish contact with Mike Florio, because he also has some information here about what was going on with Antonio Callaway and the excuse that he was using for not knowing that the weed was in his car.
Right.
And making the point that if a cop could smell the weed, then he should have been able to smell the weed when he got his car. We have Mike Florio with us. So the question I asked before the line dropped is Hugh Jackson kind of a clown, or is this just the way that the Hard Knocks editing and production is making him look?
Well, boy, isn't that a shame if they are editing this in a way to make a guy who isn't a clown look like a clown? That would be unfortunate
criminal
for the Cleveland Browns.
Sure would.
But here's the juxtaposition that is going to exist throughout this year's version of Hard Knocks, because anytime someone from the Browns says, we're doing things differently, we're turning this around, we're reminded, if we have any memory capability whatsoever, that Hugh Jackson is 1-31 in 2 years. He's the main reason why the team's been so bad. And I'm astounded, guys, that this guy managed to keep his job after going 0-16, to somehow blame it on anyone, everyone but himself for being 0-16. And I'm a firm believer, you go 0-16 as an NFL head coach, you're permanently disqualified from ever being an NFL head coach again. It's worked with Rod Marinelli. He's never been even mentioned to be a head coach again. I don't know how Hugh Jackson is employed, but so much of what I see and digest is through that lens of these Browns are trying to turn it around, but they still have the same coach who's won one total game in two seasons.
Yeah, it's strange to me, too, because going through some of the offseason moves the Browns made, I thought they were, if not kind of fun, then definitely creative, and grabbed a bunch of talent that they really haven't had for a while. I don't know if you... Can you make an evaluation of that talent, of those moves they've made in the offseason, versus a coaching staff that may be working against the common cause?
Yeah, I mean, I think they are quote-unquote better. They can't get much worse. The question becomes, how much better will the results be? I think they could have won 3 or 4 games last year, and that with the right coach, that coach makes a difference. The talent levels between the teams in the NFL are so much more narrow now than they were back in the 70s, that a good coach can make a difference and should make a difference 2, 3, 4 times a year. A bad coach is going to make a difference 2, 3, 4 times a year, and I think that's one of the reasons they were 0-16. I think some of that is definitely the coach's fault. So if this team is good enough to be 8-8, well, how many games is Hugh Jackson going to lose that the Browns should have won, and where does that leave them? And it's a sad commentary for Browns fans that the thought of being 5-11 or 6-10 is actually a reason to be excited. For most teams, it's like, oh, great. For the Browns, it'd be like, oh, great. And it's just strange to me. And I guess the worst thing that could happen long-term for the Browns would be for Tyrod Taylor and Hugh Jackson to come together and take the team to the playoffs or close to it and force the organization to keep both of them for another year. I think the sooner they go with Baker Mayfield, the better off they're going to be, regardless of whether Hugh Jackson's the coach next year or not. I think you get Mayfield on the field. He's the guy they think can be a franchise quarterback. Get him on the field and let him get to his ceiling, whatever his ceiling may be.
Mike, you're one of the first to have the details of the Roquan Smith compromise. It sounds like a chapter in a history book somewhere, but he is not doing anything to dispel the impression that he was simply used as a pawn by CAA in this. And maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, we don't know, but he clearly doesn't care about that perception when yesterday deflecting every question about these specifics that you reported as is, well, it's between my agent and Mr. Pace, between my agent and Mr. Pace. Well, Mr. Pace doesn't talk. You can never find him. He hasn't talked to anybody in a month because he just doesn't have to and doesn't feel that he owes that to anybody. But it, do you know how much agency Roquan Smith had in this, how much he said, absolutely, I want to be the test case. I am willing to be a guinea pig here, and how much he just maybe got used.
Now, I don't know whether he was actively participating, saying, let's dig in, whether he just took a very passive approach and said, hey, that's why I have agents. I trust you guys. But, you know, the bottom line is a compromise was reached, and it should have been reached a long time ago. I think both sides have blame there. This is where ego and stubbornness come into play, because I think it truly was a middle ground at a time when we thought there would be no middle ground. So I think both sides need to be blamed for not identifying that middle ground a hell of a lot earlier. You know, there were other contracts in that first round. Minkah Fitzpatrick, for example, with the Dolphins, a lot of the same protections that Roquan Smith eventually got. That contract was done a long time ago. This is something that should have been done. And again, both sides bear blame. Maybe one more than the other. I don't know at this point which one. But you work this stuff out before training camp opens. It shouldn't have been that hard.
Mike, I can't shake the feeling that given the way Roquan Smith talked about it yesterday, given the fact that Ryan Pace didn't talk about it yesterday, that everybody's cool with the perceptions we have out there now. And I wonder if this whole holdout wasn't, like you said, ego-driven for sure, but also made easier to do and engage in because of who Roquan is, both as a player and a person. It feels like everybody kind of figured it's going to be fine because of who we draft.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And also, it's not a skill position player. If it's a quarterback, running back, or receiver, I think it's a bigger deal. Defensive players, you know, there wasn't that outcry locally that, hey, Bears, you got to get this done. And the Bears were able to drag their feet a little bit longer and engage in this stare down deeper into camp. And maybe it would have been better off for the Bears and everyone else if fans would have been clamoring loudly and demanding that this deal get done. Because once they realize, and my guess is that, you know, if you're going to make a meaningful contribution week one, now's the time to get in. If you wait much longer, it's going to be hard to be ready to go. And I think that's why we're starting to hear some, you know, some real rumblings about Aaron Donald and the Rams working something out. This is it. Anything after this, it's going to be hard to be ready to go. So I think Smith will be fine. And a template has been created now to have a middle ground where teams want to have certain language in the contract that protects them, but the player wants the protection to, as a practical matter, make it unlikely that they're going to find themselves with that gotcha card. That's the thing that bothers me, this idea that, oh, you crossed a line, and now we can hold over your head the possibility of cutting you and not owing you another dime. I don't like that. If a guy does something he shouldn't have done and you're going to cut him, then cut him. But don't have something that just becomes a convenient excuse to get rid of him later. So they worked it out. I think it's fair to both sides. I just wish they would have done it sooner.
What's the value in some of these dual team practices? Do we know if there is anything that tracks to teams that do this get more or less success out of it?
Well, you know what? The Patriots seem to do it far more often than not. So anything the Patriots do, I think we have to regard as potentially useful. The key is having another team where the coaching staffs trust each other that there won't be fights. I think if you have fights, nothing good comes out of it. It shows a lack of discipline, and it exposes guys to unnecessary injury. I think part of it, too, is long-term planning, right? You get a chance to see other personnel up close. You get to scout another team. And, I like their backup linebacker. He's going to be a free agent in 2 years. We're going to keep an eye on him, and maybe we make a run at him at the appropriate time. So that door swings both ways because your roster gets exposed to scrutiny as well. But I think that giving your players someone fresh to go out and hit so you don't have fights in your own training camp because it's the same offensive and defensive lines hitting each other every day, I think that's beneficial. And just getting that process, you know, seeing other helmets and jerseys and pants, you know, you're going to be doing that every week once the season starts. And I just think having those other bodies around, it just part of the preparation for the season. And again, if the Patriots do it, there must be value in it.
Talk with Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. It is hump day. That's when we've got Mike on, which means people need a little boost to get to the weekend. Mike, what storylines are you looking for most in this second official week of preseason football? Is it, you know, rookie quarterbacks maybe making a push? Ben Roethlisberger apparently has a concussion. I don't know how much that means Mason Rudolph plays. Stuff like that, or is it more the Aaron Donald-type contractual look?
No, I think it's how do these rookies look, the new players. You know, I said last week the three things to watch going into week one, and I think the same thing applies here. Number one, hold your breath for injuries. Number two, how do the rookies look? Number three, how do the players coming back from serious injury look? Deshaun Watson got barely a cameo in week one against the Chiefs. How does the Texans quarterback look as he comes back from that torn ACL? And also, that this is a weird time of year because on one hand, there's a sense of hope and anticipation and everyone's 0-0 and anything can happen. But then there's that dread that is balanced out by the excitement where you're worried about the text message that's going to come at any moment that a key player has suffered a serious injury. Darius Geis gone for the year already in Washington. That Teddy Bridgewater injury from a couple of years ago, fluke freak thing that happened after most of the hay was in the barn. You never know when it's going to come. And I think it's easier to process injury when you're in the midst of the fight week in and week out because, hey, injuries happen when you play football games that count. But when you're doing stuff that doesn't count and you have to worry about that ever-present risk of injury, it's just a weird... It's weird. I mean, I if I'm a Texans fan, I'm watching the team, and it's like, oh, there's Deshaun Watson. Oh, he looks great. Oh, my God, I hope he doesn't get hurt. Right. Oh, look at that throw. Oh, my God, did he get hurt? Did he get up? Please get up. And I think that applies, you know, across the board for every team, especially for the star players.
When we last left the story with the Players Association and the league talking about the anthem policy, they said, everything's on hold. We're talking. It's amiable discussion, it's constructive, yet crickets. Nothing is coming out of there. And players are still going about their business. I think the overall temperature is lowered a little bit for whatever reason. I don't know if there is still the fear of the inevitable presidential tweet that's coming just because that's his nature. That's what he does. That's what he's going to do. I don't know if the level of fear is still there, but is there any progress? Are they actively trying to work toward anything, or do we just have this this attenuated lack of understanding?
There was a sense a couple of weeks ago that maybe the NFLPA would eventually agree that the players will stand for the anthem and that it will be an olive branch extended by the union in advance of the upcoming CBA discussions, which will be happening in a couple of years. That has subsided, and there were some comments from Demora Smith, the NFLPA executive director, to theundefeated.com. I think it was Jason Reed who did the interview, where Smith says there's no drop-dead day to get this done. This is a problem the NFL created. You know, the kinds of things that suggest that they're girding for more of a fight than an amicable resolution to the situation. And this is a problem the NFL created. You know, people want to say, well, the players created the problem by protesting. No, the NFL created the problem by writing a policy that allows them to protest, by creating a right to protest, by reiterating the existence of that right when Colin Kaepernick was seen protesting, by reiterating again the existence of the right last year when the president attacked in the first place. And if the commissioner would have swooped in August of 2016 and nipped this thing in the bud the way that the NBA did when Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf was first spotted not standing for the anthem 20-some years ago, none of this would have happened. And this was created by the NFL. And I think the NFLPA realizes we got leverage here, right? And if we give the NFL a bone on this one, are they going to be nice to us down the road, or are they going to continue to have a scorched earth policy on any and all negotiations? And see, that's the problem. The relationship isn't in place where they can do each other a favor, or they could have done that favor 2 years ago and kept this from becoming an issue. So I think that's the problem. And kudos to the union for realizing we got the tiger by the tail on this one. And if they want to fix this, they're going to have to do something for us. And I don't think the NFL wants to do anything.
Trying to play the game theory a little bit, is would the NFLPA then be cool with letting this nebulous stance exist into the season then because they continue to hold leverage if they do, or would that be too long?
No, I think they're willing to let it stand. I think when D. Smith says that we reject the idea that there's a drop-dead day for getting this done, I assume that the drop-dead day would be the start of the regular season.
Yeah.
And they're fine going forward. And it's this weird position now where... And the league hasn't said anything more about it, but the statement they sent me last Thursday night when protests happened again is that the Anthem Policy 2.0 from May, which says you can't protest if you're on the sidelines, if you're inclined to protest, you got to be in the locker room, that's not going to be enforced against players, but it's still in effect. So technically, the Dolphins violated it, the Eagles violated it, the Broncos violated it by not having guys in the locker room, but having them protest either in the tunnel or out on the field. And what's the league going to do? Is the league going to fine teams when the teams can't turn around and punish the players? And that's what they've done. They've tabled any of the enforcement against the players because there's a viable grievance because the league passed this policy without talking to the players first. I mean, it's just a mess. Everything the NFL does to make this better, they make it worse. And I don't want to be unfair with the league here, but it is astounding me. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, that a league like that can be so enormously successful despite one example of mismanagement after another. It shows you how strong the product is.
Yeah. Mike, thank you. We look forward to you being a part of our coverage all season.
All right, thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, I mentioned, is going to be in this spot on Wednesdays as we get the football season. When we come back, I'm going to unveil to you.
We're
going to
do the list.
We want to do the football lineup.
Let's do the football lineup.
If you want to know what your football experience is going to be like on the Bernstein and McKnight show, this horrible, horrible, wonderful, wonderful sport that we love so much.
Can't stop laughing at how stupid
terrifying, destructive sport that I can't really get enough of.
Just love it. Yeah, just love it and deal with the problems afterward, I suppose.
A lot of experts that are going to be working with us. The segment brought to you by Spot Hero. Finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. You want a list of people that are going to make sure that you are as informed and entertained as possibly can be.
You notice this list? I'm always making lists.
I want that
list. The Bears and the NFL overall, just sort of bathing in footballness. I got it for you next. The programming announcement coming up on The Score. And when you want football talk middays in Chicago, you are going to get it on the Bernstein and McKnight show this season, because I have here our football lineup. And this is
a hell of a thing.
Yeah, this is just the start. A lot of hard work being put in by Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Mitch Rosen to string this together. And you know, we had some input here based on what we thought about some of the people who have been contributors to this show.
See, the fun part about this lineup is Jay and Rick scouted a few people, got them onto the list, and we have them for your football coverage, too. So we're kind of picking them out of the ether here. It's good.
All right, we love our Bears Mondays. So this is what Bears Monday is going to look like. 10 o'clock every Monday in studio is Lance Briggs.
Yes.
So Lance is going to sit with us.
Yes.
Every Monday, top of the 10 o'clock hour, break it down. Rich Campbell, then the news from the game at 11:20, and we will also have Matt Nagy's regular Monday post-game press conference. We have been released from John Fox prison. We are out of Fox jail.
We should celebrate that at some point.
So Matt Nagy, who may actually be an actual human being saying English words. On Tuesday, we're going to do something a little different with our guy Charch, where Paul Charchian is going to be on in his regular spot later in the week with McNeil and Parkins.
Right.
However, we know that the fantasy football season never ends, that there's stuff that goes on. So call it your lineup optimization day on Tuesday. So that's going to be at 11:40 when it's going to be – you're more of a fantasy
Charch's
guy than I am.
Going to help us with the waiver wire is what he's going to do, because, you know, Wednesday things go on. You've got to make your bids. If you've got a bid league, you've got to prioritize your waiver priorities. If you've got that going on, you might be in a couple leagues where maybe you're one or two here, but 11 or 12 here. I have one leagues. Leagues get one on the waiver wire. So Charch is going to help us on Tuesday fix your stuff.
Thinking outside the box on what Charch can do for you on this station.
Yeah.
And that's going to be waiver wire expertise at 11:40 Tuesdays. Also Tuesday, Dan Orlovsky, the former NFLer who can break down quarterback play like few out there, is going to do that. And that we're going to be quarterback specific, mostly Mitchell Trubisky, obviously. And is going to be, you know, he can look at this pass, at that pass, about what happened, about where his footwork was or wasn't, and in general, other NFL quarterback play issues. That's going to be on Tuesday. Every Wednesday at 10, Mike Florio is going to join us. Wednesday is going to be our day with Hub Arkish as well. So Hub is going to talk to us then. On Thursday, Hub is yours. How we do that? One day he's ours, the next day he's yours. We open up the phone lines and we load that up, Hub and you. 10 o'clock a.m. Thursday, Matt Miller, Bleacher Report, at NFL Draft Scout. That helps us bridge the two worlds. He's in that sort of perfect brackish water in between the pro prospects in college and what he thinks of what is actually happening in the NFL. Then that already hits us up into Friday. Pete Futak previews the college football weekend every Friday at 10. And then at noon, former Bear Patrick Manley will be in to scout the Bears' upcoming opponent. How about that?
That's a week, man. This is fantastic.
Yep.
Thanks a ton to Jay and Rick and Mitch for putting this all together, because it's going to be one hell of a week for your football coverage.
Yeah, those are our
people here on the Midday Show.
Lance Briggs, Rich Campbell, Paul Charchian, Dan Orlovsky, Mike Florio, Hub Arkish, Matt Miller, Patrick Manley, Pete Futak.
Need to get some cold water.
Yes, never let it be said we don't take care of you. We're going to be talking Cubs with Kelly Krull in just a few moments. And, you know, I was thinking about this as I was looking at Wilson Contreras' slash line. I'm fascinated in your deductive order there. When I gave...
You needed a cloud from me.
I gave the underwhelming post-All-Star break Wilson Contreras batting statistics. And in order of, and I said, who is this based on this slash line? And you went Schwarber,
I think I
Hayward,
went Schwarber
Russell.
First. I think I went Schwarber, Russell, Hayward.
Schwarber, Russell, Hayward.
Yeah.
So then I was wondering if we should kind of look at the at those guys you first. Oh, by the way, I misspoke. It's 11:40 for Kelly Krull. Mark Grody is going
to
join us with
at 10:40. Do a little
at 10:40 in a moment. But so, having looked at those numbers now, how far off were you in your guesses of those guys?
Yeah, so there were a couple of texters that called me out for not getting Wilson Contreras right away, so my ego kicked in, and I walked over to baseballreference.com, and I was like, no, the hell with you. I'm going to find out these Honestly, they're all really close. This cloud is much
really?
Too closely grouped together, and it's far too big considering how long it's been since the All-Star break.
Let me give the slash line again for Wilson Contreras. And when we say slash line, just, you know, what does that mean? Some of you advanced crazy baseball nerds. All slash line is batting average slash on base percentage slash slugging percentage. That's referred to as a slash line.
Right.
And it's just three numbers that help you understand how a guy's hitting offensively rather than doing weighted on base average, WRC plus, whatever. 235. 316, 353.
Start with Addison Russell. Since the break, and obviously the first half was good for Russell. We were talking about that as being the longest, most solid streak of baseball he's put together, at least offensively. Since the break, 236, 286, 264.
Oy.
It's been rough. Kyle Schwarber, since the break, 219, 301, 329.
Jeez.
Jason Hayward, since the break, 250, 337, so not awful there, but 310 slugging percentage. And we've talked a lot about how hard Jason Hayward hits the ball or how hard he doesn't hit the ball, despite the fact that he's bounced back to a pretty decent season overall, and that's been good for the Cubs. It has helped them build up the best record in the National League. It has helped them hold a two-game advantage over the Milwaukee Brewers. But that is Russell, Schwarber, Hayward, and Contreras, all four of them, really coming up a little empty since the All-Star break. And Javi Baez is August, though his numbers, you know, finishing out July are pretty decent. The numbers in August aren't good either. This is a team that is, we've seen them go through offensive slumps this season and manage to hold things together, whether that's through the bullpen that they've put together, whether that's through a couple of shrewd managing moves and slotting in a pinch hitter here and there and getting performance from a guy like Bodey or LaStella. You've seen overall an offense that's come up short, and that's a big reason for the Cubs' essentially 500 record since July 19th.
This Cubs season is so damn weird.
It is.
It's so weird. If you look at where they are relative to the National League and how they keep winning games and all these ridiculous comeback wins and so much drama and so much bullpen performance, yet every day feels off. It feels uncomfortable. You know, the losses feel worse than the wins feel good.
Rizzo said it last night after the game, not too many teams streaking in the National League. And he's kind of right. He's
Cardinals
kinda, other than the Cardinals, who have put a lot together. They've won seven in a row. The next longest current winning streak in the National League is four. That's held by the Rockies and by the Atlanta Braves. You look at the last 10 records for a lot of teams in the National League, they're most of them right around 500, with the exception of the Braves, who've gone 7-3. Everybody else is right around the Cubs, 6-4 in their last 10. I'm not saying that that's necessarily indicative of one thing or another, but as Rizzo kind of noted last night, not a lot of teams are going streaking and wearing the green hats in the National League. That seems to be the case, at least in the last week and a half.
Wearing the green hats.
Hey, wear your green hat. We're going streaking. It's old school.
I watched the movie Old School.
Yeah,
the wearing of the green hat. At the risk of dissecting with a blunt tool, I just looked up how many home runs the Cubs have hit. And it's not enough. They've only hit 122 homers as a team.
Over the span of the games they've played, that would be one home run, about 1.03 home runs per game for that team.
Look at this, though. If you look at the teams that are at the bottom of the league in total homers, what do these teams have in common? As I go from the very bottom, Tigers, Marlins, Royals, Giants, Rays, Padres, Twins, Mets, Reds.
So was that six rebuilds, three teams that thought they could pull it together, and the Giants who employ Hunter Pence?
Yeah, I was thinking mostly bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Mostly.
The overall tenor of that group would be, and the next team is the Cubs. The Cubs have hit the same number of homers as the Reds.
They're off the home run rate by about 30% from last season.
30%?
I think so, if I've done the math right, and a percentage has kind of befuddled me at times, but 1.37 per game last season, 1.03 so far this year.
That's huge.
It's a very marked difference. And yet, look at the talent that you've put together. You've insulated yourself one way or another, and every day it seems to be something else that's holding you together. It's like the Millennium Falcon is what it is. It's just holding together. It's still the fastest ship in the galaxy, but it's just held together by like duct tape and a hydro spanner.
It's
that's
still,
all it is.
Still doing the Kessel Run.
Think about it. I mean, think about what this team is.
I like that. This Cubs team is the Millennium Falcon.
She'll hold together. You hear me, baby? Hold together. That's what
Chewy
this is.
Punch it.
It's still the pick a National League team that you'd rather have. And I can give you a pretty good argument as to why you might be wrong. I mean, if you want to be the Atlanta Braves, cool. But look what Ozzie Albies has done in the last month and a half. He has completely fallen off his first half pace.
The hyperdrive. We've just got to get the hyperdrive working.
You've got to give Han more time.
When we come back, you can win $1,000 in cash, and even better, you get to hear from Mark Grody. He's on the practice field in Denver. That's on the score. We found that man, Roquan Smith. It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on the score. This hour's keyword is pad. Text pad to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is pad to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Mark Grody of The Score, who covers the Bears, he's on Twitter at Mark Grody Sports, because he loves sports. The sport he loves is football, and he is in Denver. You can hear all of the sounds of Bears and Broncos practice behind him. What does it look like there, Mark?
Well, it's very interesting because practice just started about 15 minutes ago in terms of both teams doing stretching on their respective fields out here. And then just moments ago, the Bears broke up into their individual positions with their respective coaches. And there is a flood of media right now watching Glenn Pyers' group. And that happens to be the inside linebackers. And that's where Roquan Smith would be living. I'm watching them right now. They are working on fumble drills right now. And Roquan Smith is involved and just getting going. And he looks like Roquan Smith out here so far.
Go Bears!
But yeah. He is certainly the main attraction. There's a lot of Denver media kind of intrigued, looking on the periphery at what we're all looking at right now, and that's Roquan Smith. As if we didn't see him already in OTAs and minicamp and rookie camp, but it's the first time all over again for Roquan Smith out here.
Mark, the new Roquan watch is, when will the Bears rule him out of this preseason game, given the fact that he just hasn't practiced a whole lot? I thought it would have been done a lot earlier. What kind of odds do you give this of happening, of him playing?
I can't imagine. I mean, if he does play, it would be for like one series. I don't think that, you know, they're going to measure it. I mean, they said that they were going to get together and see if he is capable, if he is in shape. And I guess right now, at this very moment, is the start of seeing what kind of football shape he is in. They obviously don't want to push him too hard in terms of any kind of fast injury. So, you know, we'll get a chance to talk to Matt Nagy after practice today. I was just told also that we will have Roquan Smith at the podium again today. So he will be accessible to us, and maybe we'll have a little bit more of an idea of whether or not he plays on Saturday. But if I had to do the yes or no, check a box, I'd say no.
Why isn't Ryan Pace talking?
I don't know. I mean, hasn't that been the MO, though, through the years? I mean, I think for something like that, he probably should have done more than just give a statement. It would have been good in terms of helping out Roquan Smith, who, as you guys well know, didn't say a whole lot yesterday, and we were already told today by media relations that, you know, he's going to answer those questions about the contract and the holdout the exact same way he did yesterday. And so if those questions persist, he probably won't take too many questions at this point. So sorry guys, I'm being moved from the spot I'm in right now.
You're being
physically moved?
Yeah, are you okay? Dragooned?
Let's go fight for Cody.
Being shanghaied. What's happening? Hands off me, you damn dirty apes.
Yeah, I thought these mountain people were laid back. He just gave me the old point and go over there. So now I'm standing by Hub Arkish, which makes me feel very comfortable.
Oh, yes, very safe. Tell Hub we love him. I'm wondering if – I would imagine that given a 29-day holdout like this, we'd have heard something from teammates, from anybody within the organization if Roquan's holdout started to make people smell a little bit differently, you know, started to make things look a little bad for relations. But we haven't heard any of that. I'm guessing – that everybody's totally cool with the rookie handling business the way he handled business.
Yeah, I think in this era, in this year, 2018, that now more than ever, players get it that you got, especially in this sport, players get it that you got to go out there and get yours. I'm sure that there's some players, and nobody's going to admit it publicly, that are like, well, you know, why does this kid get those kind of clauses? I mean, he did get those kind of clauses in his contract, and we don't. You know, some of the fourth or fifth year type of players with the Bears. So I'm sure that there might be a little bit of that, and there's definitely going to be Bears players that are looking at him and saying, you know, all right, let's see what you're all about. You know, I mean, you held out for 29 days. Everybody says you're NFL ready. You are the eighth pick in the draft. You're sideline to sideline. You're 4-5-40. Let's see it all in play. Let's see you be a star and just be an automatic starter on September 9th in Green Bay. So I'm sure that there's some of that, too.
My internal Bears clock is a little thrown off by the fact that this would be the first exhibition game, but instead it's the second one because of the Hall of Fame game. And usually when we start getting to the second game, I start wondering about if and when they get a head start on trimming the roster a little bit, allowing some of their players a longer opportunity to join another team. Sometimes that's just considered professional courtesy. Somebody like Hronas Grassou, who looks like he's on the outside looking in at the moment, it doesn't have a spot, who might have a spot elsewhere, maybe you don't string him along. Do you get any sense of when that first round of cuts is going to come?
There's been no indication of it, and when Matt Nagy at least was asked about it in the final day of camp, he said that there's no cuts on the horizon. And that was specifically, too, when he was asked about Aaron Lynch, who, you know, I think they still want to give every single opportunity to, but being that he has not been out here because of his hamstring injury, you know, things look naturally a little bit iffy for him. I would imagine, Dan, that probably after this second game against Denver, probably in that week after, you'll start to see more cuts. I mean, there's been some cut and add that has occurred, obviously, so far. But in terms of the waves of cuts coming, we've been given no indication as of yet. And I think that's a good point. The Hronas Grassou thing, I guess, from, you know, a human side is too bad, because this guy was obviously extremely promising, a third-round pick in Ryan Pace's first draft back in 2015. And he just has had this sort of helpless look on his face, like almost like he knows something's coming. So that'll be an interesting one to watch.
How's Allen Robinson look? What's the plan for him coming into this game?
Allen Robinson has been very limited out there. Like, he's been out there, but even when he is, you know, there, it doesn't seem like he's going full force as of yet. And this is all just in the name of preservation. Why push him too hard, being that he still is, in essence, recovering from, you know, that left torn ACL. So he hasn't done anything highlight worthy yet, Connor. I actually asked him, I said, are you going to play in, you know, the game this week against Denver? And he just said, that's the plan. So that doesn't mean he's going to play a single down, but at least he thinks that it sounds like that's the next progression, that he would get at least a series or two in this game against Denver. But, you know, one thing about the Bears from the very start of OTAs and mini camps and all that kind of stuff, they have been as precautious as possible, especially with veteran guys that they know already know what they're doing. Like, why push it when you don't have to?
I love the use of precautious as the way you did. I don't know that I've ever quite heard that used that way, and I found that artful. How hard are these teams going to hit each other in these practices?
Well, apparently not at all. That's been the thing throughout, that they're obsessed with nobody getting into fights. We'll see if, as they say in NFL lingo, if they go live, as in real hitting, and how long they would do it. But I'm getting the feeling that if they do go live, it's going to be on a very limited basis. They just, both sides seem to have a fear of the fight. I think that both sides like the idea of the joint practice and going up against different guys, and I think it's really good for the Bears, especially considering the young offense. Both sides have been very, very careful in making sure they tell their players this is a no-fight zone.
Mark, we will be handing out a third Ken Mastroli Award come Monday. It is an award that goes to the Bears player who provides the most production when it means the least in a preseason game. We awarded Ryan Nall the second. Javon Wims got the first. I'm wondering if you've got an odds-on favorite, given playing times that you've seen and some of the practices, for those of us who maybe want to place a bet on the possible winner of the third Ken Mastroli Award.
Connor, can I give you two?
Oh, absolutely.
I'll give you an offensive guy and a defensive guy. Because one guy that I've been waiting to see flash is number 81 on the Bears. He's a wide receiver. His name is Marlon Brown. Big, tall guy, 6'5", 6'6", legit. Played for Baltimore. Had a couple good years, 2013 and 14, before his back kind of went out on him for the last couple of years. But so Marlon Brown, 81, out of Georgia. And then the other guy on defense is the guy that I'm looking at right now in the outside linebacker drill. His name is Kasim Edebali. He is number 57 in your program out of Boston College, a guy that's getting a tryout here with the Bears at outside linebacker. So Marlon Brown and Kasim Edebali. Edebali, by the way, he'll have 2.5 sacks. That's what I got him down for.
Wow, a very, very specific prediction from Mark Grody. We will let you get back to work. Appreciate the presence.
You're welcome, guys. Have a good show.
Yeah, we'll do our best.
I'm looking through. Mark has picked really well for a Ken Mastroli Award winner. I went to Our Lads for the depth chart of the Bears because I'll be honest, I'd find Marlon Brown, number 81. He's listed as the fourth wide receiver behind Javon Wims. So solid pick there. Edebali, though, his guy, 57, not on the Our Lads depth chart. So that is a solid pick by Mark Grody for your Ken Mastroli Award.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. You know that 11 o'clock, midway through the show, we do something called the Midday Midway. Sometimes sports stories, sometimes non-sports stories, things we find fun that we think you will find interesting and entertaining as well. I have a woman in Phoenix who is an absolute stone-cold badass.
In Phoenix?
A woman in Phoenix who found an invader in her yard.
Yep, that's Phoenix.
Took care of business.
We're going to dive into the Denver Broncos depth chart just a little bit and see where things are falling for a certain position, because it's a little alarming there. We will also dive into what might be one of the most confusing, elucidating, intelligent and stupid quotes of this year's baseball season.
Okay, good. Then I'm going to do another non-sports one. Germany has a beer problem. A serious beer problem.
It all tastes like oranges? That's right. I said it.
You can't take it back either. That's coming up the Midday Midway on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.